Those of us that are going to remain up here, I hope you got one of those handouts. If you didn't, I think there's some more on the back table there, the handouts for tonight. We are going to be concluding this evening. This is the final lesson for our study, this part of our study of apologetics on creation versus evolution. I really have consolidated things. There's so much that you could go into. Consolidated the aspects of disproving the fallacies of evolution to the major points. The ideas of, first of all, natural selection, and then we looked at the fallacies of the evolutionary timeline, and tonight we're going to look at the fallacy of the fossil record as it lines up with evolution. Actually, the fossil record, we'll see tonight, very much disproves evolution and supports strongly the biblical record of a six-day creation and a young earth. With that considered, is there anybody that does not have one of those handouts? Right here, do we have an extra handout out there, back there? We've got a couple here. Need one. There we go. We'll look at the fossil record. So the plan is that we are going to take a study tonight and conclude this aspect of the study. Next Thursday, we'll be taking a break from the apologetics series as Pastor Lewis preaches. And then the goal is then that following week, we're going to cover the standing in defense and contending for the biblical account of the worldwide flood. And I'm Ezekiel going to try to do that in one lesson. We'll see how well that works. It might be two. If so, the goal is to wind this down to the end of November, and we have got some plans going into December. But tonight, the fossil record here, and we're jumping right in. The fossil record is used to prove evolution, but it actually disproves evolution. The fossil record is vast. Darwin knew that the fossil record didn't provide evidence to his theory in his day, but he believed that when more fossils were discovered, that his theory would then be proved. They just had to find that that missing link. And today there are over 200 million fossils in museums worldwide. Over 200 million fossils, yet still the link is missing. So tonight I want to look over and kind of touch on briefly eight different ways that the fossil record actually pulls the rug out from underneath the idea of evolution. First is that its geological column has major problems. We're going to jump into what that means, what that geological column is. We've mentioned it, but we have not jumped into it deeply. Number two, it does not contain countless transitional creatures. As we've mentioned, you'll open up textbooks, you'll see drawings, you can go to museums and they'll have recreations, they'll have wax models, and they'll have it there and sell it to you like they have found these missing links, like they have found these transitional creatures, half bird, half dinosaur, but they have not. Fossil record also shows that creatures appearing suddenly and fully formed. They look at the timeline of fossils, and they say all of a sudden, boom, here is this creature, and it's fully formed. It also shows complexity from its earliest stages and exhibits stability. Sixthly, the fossil record has the uniformitarian view is now even rejected by many evolutionists. Also, number seven, the uniformitarian view was disproven by an example to look at is Mount St. Helens, not too far from here, just a couple states away. And then lastly, the fossil record shows evidence of a global flood. So this lesson really kind of tees things up, getting us ready to move into, okay, now what does explain all of these fossils? It's the flood. So getting into this first point of the fossils record, fossil record's geological column has major problems. So this is a geological column as displayed in a textbook in our public high schools. The fossil column consists of layers of the earth that supposedly represents each of those layers of the earth representing millions of years of time. There's supposed to be 13 major eras or periods of time. And this is pixelated a little bit, but we'll look at that. 13 different periods of time. And each of those is, some of them 60 million years for that period. Some of them 50 million years. For instance, the Paleozoic period right in here, is about 540 to 250 million years ago. And the age of the multicelled organisms, the age of fish and amphibians. And so from that point to now, they're saying all these fish and amphibians have become everything we see. Then it moves up to the Mesozoic period, about 250 to 66 million years ago. Supposedly, all of this I'm representing is what they claim. The age of the reptiles and dinosaurs. And then the top one there is the Cenozoic, 66 million years ago to present, the age of mammals and birds. What they're saying is these very small reptiles and insects and fish turned into these larger creatures, turned into mammals and birds. While the kids are singing downstairs, I was trying to figure out what that was. I did not think I had background music to my presentation this evening, but we do. The problems with the geological column is a problem of depth. Just to explain this, according to evolutionists, each of these layers represents millions of years of sediment that was gradually laid down over time. We can see this happening in our time, is that sediment does lay down, but they're saying this is millions of years of sediment. So each layer, in this theory, would be miles thick, and the entire geological column would be 100 to 200 miles thick. The problem is, it's not seen anywhere in that fashion, anywhere in the earth. In this book here, Physical Geology, the author here, Leighton Judson here, says, "We cannot find sedimentary rock representing all of the Earth's time neatly in one convenient area. There are a few places on Earth where multiple layers can be seen, but none of these layers are very thick, and some are actually very minuscule." So they're going to say, hey, over millions of years, there should be this much. There should be several dozen miles worth of sedimentary rock. And actually, in some places, they'll find them, but they're only inches to feet, not miles thick. It's not evidence for a slow evolution. It's actually evidence for layers of sediment quickly laid upon another and in a great flood. Problems with a geological problem is a problem of the missing layers. And the missing layers. So if you have a column, if you have that graph that we saw at the beginning, and I think we'll pull it back up here in a bit, and you say, hey, this is the age of 66 million years ago to 75 million years ago. Well, when they're just missing, did those years just not exist on that part of the earth? Well, unconformities are layers in which millions of years of supposed evolutionary history are missing. There are 14 major nonconformities in the Grand Canyon alone. So there's one or two. Just look at the Grand Canyon. There's 14. In one place, a sandstone layer from the supposed Cambrian age rests on a supposed Precambrian layer. There's no layers between the two, but evolutionists claim there's a billion years of time between the two. So they just lost a billion years in their proof. In their proof in the Grand Canyon, a billion years between those layers, because there's layers missing between. If evolutionist is true, the billion years would be represented by deep layers of rock. These layers just aren't just shallow, they're missing. Another problem with the geological column is the problem of fossilized trees piercing these layers. Now we can see fossilized trees. I've got a picture of one here. This fossilized tree here is in Nova Scotia, Canada. and layers the earth, supposedly, this exact example, evolutionists still claim there's millions of years. Each one of these layers here is millions and millions of years. There's a hammer chisel here laid there for representation. That's not part of the fossil. But there's this tree suspended in that rock, straight through those tens and tens and tens of millions, supposedly, of years of rock. The tree is piercing through those layers, and this contradicts the theory that the layers were laid down gradually. What it actually holds up and points to is that something rapidly happened to bury this under a lot of sediment very quickly, or else the tree would rot. I remember one time in Belize, I was helping clear a backyard area where presently is the school there in Belize, and there were some old trees that had laid down, but they had only been laid down and cut down for a few years. But Brother Terry, they'd started to rot. And when we picked it up, only about half the tree came up. And I'm glad none of you were there, because I screamed like a little girl. Because out came just dozens of tarantulas running everywhere. And unlike the Gregory Blanco, who was very bold and was like, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. As a scared white American, I was very, very frightened. But over the course of a few years, dampness, the elements, it's going to break down the soft material of the wood. This wood is not going to stand the test of time. If this is slowly over millions of years burying this tree and fossilizing this tree, that tree would have rotted away far before millions and millions and millions of years. Other problems with the geological column, the problem of out-of-place fossils. So they will date these fossils, they will date these columns, and then the things are out of whack. Things are out of order of where they say they should be. Many fossils have been found in the wrong layers of rock. Imagine going to a rock and seeing a fossil saying, man, that fossil is not in the right part of the rock. Because they came into it with their conclusion. Walt Brown here in mechanical, a PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT, gives many examples in his book in the beginning of these fossils being out of place. Right here in Uzbekistan, a hoof prints of a horse were found in the rocks dating to dinosaurs. But if you remember, in this Jurassic column, horses aren't supposed to be here yet. Horses are up here in the more recent, in the 66 million years to now. Horses are a mammal. But in Uzbekistan, they found a column of rock that was of what they consider the Jurassic period. And in that column of rock is horses' hoof prints. Another one, horses supposedly evolved about 60 million years ago in this layer, but horse hoof prints were found in this layer, which is supposed to be millions of years before horses evolved. They cannot explain that. There's petrified trees in Arizona's petrified forest with fossils, fossilized nests of bees and cocoons of wasps in these trees. But insects supposedly didn't evolve until 100 million years later after these trees were fossilized. Explain that one. I can. It was a flood. A bird that has been named, I thought I was going to pronounce this earlier when I was looking at it. It's very confusing. That's the first thing I see. Confuciosaurus is what I think of, but it's not the full pronunciation. But it predates the supposed feathered dinosaur from which it allegedly evolved. So in looking at these geological columns, they're saying, hey, so this dinosaur in this column then goes and becomes a half dinosaur in this column and then becomes a full bird in this column. But wait, even before the dinosaurs, here's a bird. That's not supposed to be there until up here. And so they're just quiet about those things because it doesn't match up. There's a book I found. Scientific Studies in Special Creation listed nearly 200 wrong ordered fossil layers in the United States alone. So the first issue there with the fossil record supporting evolution, well, the fossil record supporting evolution because it doesn't, is that the geological layers are all confusing to an evolutionist and very, very normal looking to a biblicalist. I'll make up a word tonight, but someone who believes in the flood. The next issue is the fossil record does not contain the countless transitional creatures that Darwinian evolution requires. Darwin admitted that the fossil record didn't contain partially formed creatures. Like I mentioned, in his day, what he wrote in The Origin of Species is the number of intermediate varieties which have formerly existed must be truly enormous. What he's saying is there must be a whole lot of these missing links, these halfway transitional creatures out there. We just haven't found them yet. In fact, subsequent research has not found the transitionary creatures. Evolutionists claim to have found missing links, but when they're examined, it is evident that they are not the kind of evidence that would stand up in court. They are not missing links. Oftentimes, they are frauds. Whether it be the Piltdown man or the Damascus man, you've got these folks that have put together a medieval age skull and an orangutan's jaw and said, hey, we found the missing link. Because they're not actually finding it fossilized. The neck of the giraffe, or where Darwin went wrong, Francis Hitching, an evolutionist, says, quote, and this is an evolutionist, not a creationist, the intermediates are simply speculative candidates in the evolutionary ladder, disconnected links in a hypothetical chain. Yet still, this gentleman is an evolutionist. Carl Werner, a PhD in engineering, examined the fossil record for evidence of the evolution of invertebrates, fish, bats, pinnipeds, flying reptiles, dinosaurs, whales, and birds, and flowering plants. He traveled to major museums and interviewed experts, but what he found is that all of the links are still missing. And he does this by the testimony of the evolutionary experts themselves. Consider invertebrates. Invertebrates are animals that do not have a spinal column or a backbone. For instance, if it rains, oftentimes you'll see a bunch of worms. You can dissect it. Many of you probably in high school have dissected a worm. And when you dissect the worm, you're not going to find a bone structure. This is going to be worms, insects, octopus, etc. And with that, let's look at what they have to say. These are evolutionists. Says, there are very few, if any, unambiguous ancestors of the things that appear in the Cambrian, or the invertebrate area right there. This is a professor at Harvard University. About fish, this gentleman here, Dr. John Long, wrote a whole book about this, 500 million years of evolution. And he's quoted in that book saying the transition from spineless invertebrates to the first backbone fishes is still shrouded in mystery. So he published his whole book, 500 million years of evolution, specifically the rise of the fishes. And he said, it's still shrouded in mystery. We don't know. What about bats? Once again, Dr. Gary Morgan and New Mexico Museum of Natural History, an evolutionist, he said there's a 10 million year period of early mammal evolution where you would guess that there'd be some sort of bat precursor. But once again, nothing. These aren't creation researchers. These are evolutionists. There's a Pterosaurus. The ancestor, and this is, once again, an evolutionist saying the ancestors are not known. They don't know where this comes from. All of a sudden, there's this, in the fossil record, all of a sudden, fully formed creature. No developing evolutionary pattern, then a fully formed creature, just fully formed creature. No explanation. Fossil record actually disproves evolution in that it does not contain the countless transitional creatures that Darwin requires. Also, then, thirdly, I'm trying to move quickly because we do have eight of these. The fossil record shows creatures appearing suddenly fully formed. Major animal groups appear in the fossil record, full-blown and raring to go. That's a quote from Jeffrey Schwartz in the Icons of Evolution. David Ropp and Stephen Stanley, evolutionists, are quoted as saying, commonly, new, higher categories appear abruptly in the fossil record without evidence of transitional forms. What they're saying is they're finding different types of creatures. They're finding all kinds of different types of animals. Hey, there's plenty of animals that are extinct today that you'll find in the fossil record, things we don't see walking around, like dinosaurs. But you don't see them half dinosaurs. They show up without a transitional form. Stephen J. Gould, an evolutionist, said a species does not arise gradually by the steady transformation of its ancestors. It appears all at once fully formed. That's what they're finding, is it's fully formed. The Cambrian explosion. The Cambrian layers is named after the rocks in Cambria, Wales, and this layer is supposed to be 500 to 600 years old and represent the beginning of life. It's the beginning down here. There's the Precambrian and then the Cambrian era. It's the beginning of the Paleozoic era. And they call the Cambrian explosion because a huge variety of fossil creatures appear in these rock layers. Once again, you guessed it, fully formed. For instance, spiders, in this layer, the spiders appear fully formed. They're even fossilized spider webs with bugs caught on those spider webs. Remember, back in that early form where they're supposed to be single-cell organisms. Trilobites, also in that layer of rock, appear fully formed. We don't have a half trilobite. Bats. Dr. Gary Morgan, a New Mexico Museum of Natural History, once again an evolutionist, he said about bats in the fossil record, they just show up. They just, boom, they're there. The Petrosaurus. When the Petrosaurus first appear in the geological record, they were completely perfect. Completely perfect.
I just pronounced it, now can't. They were flying reptiles that are now extinct.
Missing from fossil records are the millions of years of the slow development from supposed first simple life form below the Cambrian layer. They say that started out back under here in the Precambrian layer with what were single cell organisms, that one cell led to multiple cells, that led to multiple cells, that led to multiple cells. They actually say that the increase in chromosomes equals an increase in development. If that's true, we're about right at the same level as a common housefly in development. Obviously, with the same amount of chromosomes, you can see the resemblance between us and a housefly. A fossil record shows complexity from its earliest layers. Number four. According to evolution, life arose from a simple one-celled creature and developed into ever higher life forms. This is not what the fossil record shows. So they say, start here with a single cell and it moves up and starts becoming protozoans and sponges, and see, you know, it just keeps going up until finally we reach the epitome, which is us, clearly. And the big issue with this is they can draw it nicely, but they find it nowhere in the fossil record. Creatures appear with complex features. The bat, the oldest, quote, oldest bats, had the ability to fly, detect insects with echolocation, and fully formed organs. That's their oldest bats. Oh, the trilobite, its eye, each of them had 15,000 lenses in some species, has never been exceeded for its complexity. We can look at certain insect eyes that are very complex, nothing more complex than what they're calling is an unevolved creature.
There's no such thing as a simple creature. Microbiology has taught us this, that even bacterium is more complex than an entire modern city. Even plant life is extremely complex. Consider plant math. Where's Reggie? Reggie loves math. The plant is constantly monitoring the light and performing complex calculations in order to ration its store of starch until the sun reappears. This is from These Plants Do Math. If the starch stored is used too fast, plants will starve and stop growing during the night. If the store is used too slowly, some of it will be wasted. At the John Enos Center in Norwich, researchers studied that there are small flowering plants of the mustard family attempt to play tricks. They attempted to trick the plants by changing light conditions, introducing windows and sunlight at night. But the plants adapted to every single situation. It is obvious that the starch balance and light conditions are being monitored continually and recomputed according to the conditions they are met with. Also, consider plant communication. Plants communicate with another. Plants can detect sound of insects eating them. See an insect eating a leaf of a plant? Actually, that plant can hear it and can detect it. Plants make poisons to kill insects. And plants call insects to eat caterpillars. There's this plant here is a very specific type of plant that's actually a tobacco plant that sends out sounds and sends out chemical iterations that call caterpillar-eating insects. This happens only when the plant detects that a caterpillar is eating it. Yeah, that evolved, very much evolved. And so we're going to move through and not take the time for this. This one was pretty interesting. There's a plant that puts together what is called deadly lollipops. It actually puts out these little sap deals so that when an insect tries to eat it, puts these sap deals out, the insect eats that, caterpillar dies. Insects, though, these plants were complex right from the very beginning. And evolution is disproved by the fact that life appears in all of its amazing complexity from the very beginning. Number five, the fossil record exhibits stability or stasis. Creatures do not only appear in the fossil record fully formed, but they also retain that same form and habits over the supposed hundreds of millions of years. So not only do they appear, boom, here they are, they continue being exactly the same. Stephen Stanley at Johns Hopkins University is an evolutionist. He said, I have demonstrated biological stability for species of animals and plants that I think would have shocked Darwin. Something tends to prove the wholesale reconstructing of species. We've mentioned Stephen Jay Gould a few times, once again an evolutionist. He said, most species exhibit no directional change during their tenure on Earth. So the saying is, in the fossils, there is no evidence of evolving. Frank statements like these by Dr. Gould are censored from school materials. This is an interesting book. I didn't read the whole thing, but a very interesting book. So there's top evolutionists are saying, look, my job is to study these fossils. I am an evolutionist. I believe in evolution. But the fossil record does not support evolution. There's no sign of evolving. Yet that is left out of textbooks today. The bat, a fossil bat dated 50 million years old, is on display in the Museum of Natural History at Princeton, and it looks exactly the same as the skeletal structure of a modern bat. Plants. The Burke Museum of Natural History in Seattle has a display of a supposed 50 million year old fossilized leaf of cedar, pine, and other woods, and they look exactly like the modern varieties if you were to press a leaf from that type of tree today. The stability of creatures disproves Darwinism. Darwin thought that more fossils in a fossil record we discovered, and like I said, there's over 200 million fossils on display in museums today. Darwin thought that they would prove his theory of evolution. In fact, they've proved the exact opposite. The more fossils we find, the less there's evidence of this idea of evolution. Number six, the uniformitarian view is now rejected by even evolutionists. Charles Lyell said that the geological layers were laid down over millions of years of gradual buildup. He said, quote, "The past is the key to the present," meaning that conditions have remained the same over millions of years of time. We touched on this. I'm not going to get into what that means. But this is called uniformitarianism. Today, this theory is being rejected by evidence that things formerly thought to have required millions of years can actually occur very quickly. Very quickly, in fact. Some geologists are calling themselves neo-catastrophists. To call yourself something that weird, you have to be a scientist. They believe that many of the fossil rocks were laid down by massive, get this, not biblical, local floods. That these fossilized rocks were from massive localized floods. In fact, the current evolutionary theory is that the earth has witnessed a series of global catastrophes that over time quickly created these fossils. Chicago Field Museum describes six mass extinctions that were supposedly caused by shifting continents, volcanic activity, meteors, etc. What they missed is there was one worldwide flood caused by God. They don't admit that there was a global flood because they do not want to believe the Bible. Number seven, and moving through, we're making good time. The uniformitarian view was disproved by Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens, whose volcano explosion has proved that geological layers can be formed in hours and days. We are able to see this. We are able to watch this happen and study how quickly these things formed. Mount St. Helens is located in Washington State and just not too far from here. This is what Mount St. Helens looked like before the explosion. On May 18th, 1980, the mountain exploded. Am I right that you've gone and looked in? That's kind of cool. The northwestern face of this mountain was completely blasted off. You can see there's just a massive explosion of rock. Just incredible force to move that kind of earth around. Canyons up to 140 feet deep and several miles long were carved into solid bedrock in places, and this was caused by fast-flowing water and mud, not over millions of years, but hours and sometimes days. These rock layers are formed in a short period of time. This proves that layers of sediment can be laid down quickly and that great canyons such as the Grand Canyon can form quickly. Mount St. Helens gave us a firsthand look at how these canyons can form. It just has to be a large enough catastrophe. If one volcano can form the 140-foot deep canyons into solid bedrock, what would a worldwide flood look like? In my opinion, a lot like that. Number eight, the fossil record contains evidence of a global flood as described in the Bible. So we can look at how it does not prove evolution. What does it prove? The global flood explains layers of sedimentary rock throughout the world. We don't have to go far to see this sedimentary rock. As I was studying this, many folks, I grew up in the Midwest, we don't see very many layers. We just see flat, just flat. But we can go outside and we can see some terrain that looks very similar to this, not too far out our doors. Sedimentary rock is formed by moving water. It's formed by erosion. Sedimentary rock layers are hundreds of feet deep and miles long. And the shale here in South Africa is 30 feet thick and stretches for hundreds of miles. This is in Thunder Bay Formation in Michigan, is 12 feet thick and goes on for hundreds of miles. Then there is the Sewalki Hills in India, is a 2,000 to 3,000 feet high and several hundred miles long. The Morrison Formation covers an area of about a million square miles in 13 states in America, three Canadian provinces, from Manitoba to Arizona, from Alberta to Texas. The Green River Formation covers a large territory in Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. For Ezekiel's wedding, we drove past a lot of this Green River Formation there and back just a couple weeks ago. There's a thick layer of water-laid white chalky rock that runs from America to Eastern Europe and the Middle East. You can follow this chalky white cliffs. The white cliffs of Dover are part of this rock layer. But it's not just right there. That rock layer continues over and covers two continents. So we're looking at a massive global situation. This isn't a small Mount St. Helens type of catastrophe. It had to have been a massive, over the course of several continents, global flood. Global flood explains the massive fossil bends. This is the Gate Fossil National Park in the United States. The fossil beds are vast graveyards of dead animals that were buried very quickly and fossilized. Fossilization that we see in the great fossil beds throughout the earth could not be possibly explained in evolutionary terms. Fossil beds do not form under natural conditions. Dead animals are quickly consumed by animals, other animals, insects, worms, bacteria. They're destroyed by the actions of the environment, sun, rain, wind, moving water, etc. You see a roadkill on the side of the road. If you pass it by, I'm sure Zach has seen that there'll be like a deer hit on the side of the road. He goes back and forth to Idaho Falls every day for work during the week. And over the course of it, usually just a couple of weeks, you can see that animal basically disappear. That's not what we see. We see fully huge mammoths fully formed perfectly as a fossil. This is even true for giant whales. The BBC video called Blue Ocean shows a dead whale being devoured by fish, worms, and bacteria at the bottom of the sea very quickly. There's actually a special kind of worm at the bottom of the ocean that used acid to eat through the bones of the dead whales. They were first discovered on a whale carcass in 2002. The vast herds of millions of bison that were killed in the late 1800s on the western plains of America left no fossil evidence. We realize that out here in the plains and the west, literally, approximately about 10 million bison were killed over a couple of decades. Yet where are the piles and piles of bison fossils? Well, they're not there. Because what people didn't eat, animals, insects, the environment, broke it down and decayed it. The lions that infested Israel for centuries and that are mentioned 141 times in the Old Testament have left no fossilized remains. 2 Kings chapter number 17, verse 25 says, "Therefore the Lord sent lions among them, which slew some of them." This exposes another myth in the natural history museums. Chicago Field Museum. I happen to be partial to Chicago museums. Fossilization occurs naturally when dead creatures soak in groundwater for a long time. This is from the Chicago Field Museum. Step 3, soak in groundwater for a long, long time. This is an exact picture from a display in the Chicago Field Museum saying that is how fossilization occurs. British Museum of Natural History, fishy death. The fossils in the slab belonged to a school of fish that died in the same place at the same time. Their lake dried out during a hot spell, leaving the fish trapped to die. Continues to say, when the fish dies, it falls to the seafloor. and becomes buried in sediments. The soft body parts rot away, leaving hard bones. Sediment layers accumulate and become compacted over time, forming a rock mold around the skeleton. The skeleton is gradually replaced with other materials. These are unscientific statements. Fossilization does not naturally occur in these measures, and we can see that. If you don't like looking at dead fish, here we go. When a fish dies because its water source has dried up, it is quickly devoured by other animals and eaten by germs. Very quickly, actually. A fish will decay and break down extremely quickly. When a clam dies, it opens up. But explain the fossilized graveyard of clams that are all completely closed. This means they were fossilized rapidly. They were fossilized alive. Coal deposits contain the fossils of perfectly preserved skeletons of large dinosaurs, which have had to have been covered almost instantly. Otherwise, bones would have disappeared. I don't know how many of you guys have gone out hunting. I've gone riding where others have hunted. And sometimes you'll come across a carcass. My wife and I came across a couple years ago. We were riding horses out in Challis, Idaho, and we found the carcass of a pretty well-bleached carcass of an elk that had been dead maybe a year, maybe 2 years. Sun-bleached, very brittle bones, but I'll tell you what, it wasn't all there. It was scattered around. It wasn't all laid perfectly in place. Why? Because that's not what happens naturally. The only way that happens is a large disaster that quickly buries it under a lot of pressure. There's even a large dinosaur here that was fossilized while having a baby. It didn't just die and lay in that place. It was fossilized while having a baby. Fossil graveyards contain millions of soft-bodied organisms, including bacteria, embryos, leaves, flowers, worms, jellyfish, fish eggs, and insects, including butterflies. Those are not things that are preserved. And if you throw them in the ground, soak up groundwater and become fossils, we know that because you can go try it. It won't work. That can be observed. This is impossible under normal circumstances. Such things do not fossilize. They disappear quickly after death. Food can be seen in the guts of fossilized fish. There's still food in their stomachs being digested in the process of digestion. There are fossilized scorpions with their stingers still preserved. There are fish with embryos inside of their abdomens. There is a Triassic cow brand formation in Virginia where microscopic details are preserved at the resolution of approximately 1 micron. This is 25 times smaller than we can see with our eyes. These are small details. Small, very specific details quickly deteriorate if they were to be left over a period of time. There is, in Brazil, a formation where skin, scales, muscle fibers, and gills with arteries and veins are visible. In one female specimen, the ovaries are preserved, developing eggs inside of the fish. In Germany, leaves have been so well preserved that alpha and beta types of chlorophyll can be recognized in the different leaves. The color of the leaves has been preserved. The leaves are still green. You take a leaf, very, very apt this time of year. If you're interested in doing some research on leaves, there's plenty. You can rake them up and take them home from the church. I believe others would volunteer for you to come to their house as well. Why don't you take a leaf? You can put it in the dirt in your backyard. Take a green leaf, put it in the dirt in your backyard, see how long it stays green. See if it fossilizes. You'll find pretty soon, by tomorrow, by next spring, you'll be able to mix it into your garden as compost. It's not going to be a leaf. It's definitely not going to be a green preserved leaf and fossilized. There's a fish swallowing a fish. He was fossilized while eating a smaller fish. Trilobites have been fossilized in incredible detail. As we mentioned, the trilobites has a compound eye, has been fossilized in such detail that scientists have been able to study it microscopically. Fossils that are found all over the earth are evidence of a global flood that covered creatures quickly in the process of their normal living, not the process of decay, but the process of being alive, doing the things that things do when they're alive, you know, like digesting food and eating other fish and things like that, very quickly. And the global flood explains then the sorting. The global flood explains why bottom-dwelling sea creatures that live near the shore are often found, but not always, found in lower levels of the fossil strata. These would usually have been buried first. These smaller creatures buried first, other things are going to deeper water, other things are running to higher ground. Floodwaters did not reach maximum height for 150 days. It rained that long. Land animals and birds would have been killed after the sea creatures that lived in the shallow areas near land. Global flood also explains the mixing. It explains why land animals and sea animals are oftentimes jumbled together in fossil beds. Why are there ocean-dwelling or sea-dwelling creatures like fish in the same layer of fossil beds as large mammals? Well, if it was a flood and they were all being washed away in a giant catastrophic global flood, that would explain that. Global flood also explains sea creatures on mountains. Sea creatures on mountains. In Peru and other places, whale fossils, this is specifically is in Peru, whale fossils have been found high in the mountains far above sea level. How did that whale get fossilized way up there in that mountain? Did it evolve its way up there? No. It made it there in a flood. Trilobites were a sea creature, and trilobites are also found in mountainous areas. There are also fossils which are found in the Himalayas, high in the Himalayas, which are called the ammonite fossil here. Well, you see it turned like that. It's a sea creature in the same type as a squid, yet they're found fossilized in some of the highest mountains in the world, in Nepal. Evolutionists say that the land was lifted up over a long period of time to form the mountains with the sea fossils on them. So those mountains just continue to grow as sediment was laid upon another. Then how did the huge whale and the trilobites get up on those mountains? Well, they didn't, not by evolution at least. The Himalayas were formed, this is NASA Earth Observatory website, the Himalayas were formed when a large mass broke from Africa. When this land mass came close to Asia, it started to push up the land ahead of it, forming a shallow ocean with rich ocean life. The bones and shells of the plants and animals in the shallow ocean formed limestone and left fossils. This is not possible. If the creatures had died in a sea before the land was lifted up, they would have not have fossilized. Such fossilization does not happen over a long period of time. Evolutionists also theorize that some fossils were made by layers of volcanic ash. But volcanic ash doesn't make fossils. Why? Let's go back to Mount St. Helens. We have our laboratory. We can see the science in action. One of the most powerful volcanic eruptions in recent times, 1980, it poured out countless tons of ash. The ash plume was 15 miles. 15 miles that ash plume came out. The ash covered a large part of the western United States. So we see here in the red, there was 2 to 5 inches in the red areas. And in this larger area, for a good portion, actually over crossed that panhandle there of Idaho, is 1/2 inch to 2 inches. And then all the way out here, even in Oklahoma, they got some trace to 1/2 inch of this ash. It covered a large portion of this volcanic ash in a large way. This ash was billowing across the sky for many miles from this volcano as it erupted. The ash lay thick on the ground and had to be cleaned up with bulldozers. The ash covered a truck that was 12 miles from the mountain. See all this is not snow, this is volcanic ash. So volcanic ash quickly descending upon something or an area was to create fossils. This would be when it would happen. Here's a man blowing this ash off of his car. The ash killed some people, and it killed many, many animals. It didn't produce one fossil. Rock layers which fossils are found in are called sedimentary rock. Rock that is formed by volcanic lava is called indigenous. This means the rock was laid down by water. Sedimentary rock is laid down by water. It didn't happen by volcanic ash. It didn't happen over time. It happened. These situations happen. These fossils were fossilized because of water and a lot of it. Best explanation for the sedimentary rock and the massive fossil beds is a global flood as described in the Bible. So in conclusion, far from providing evidence of evolution, the evolution of life, the fossil record actually disproves evolution. Fossil record does not contain these transitional creatures that evolution requires. Fossil record shows creatures appearing suddenly, fully formed. Fossil record demonstrates complexity from its earliest layers, and the fossil record exhibits stability of species rather than change. And the fossil record actually, very clearly, in much more depth than I was able to go into tonight, proves a global catastrophic flood. And so does our Bible. And so we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about the flood here in a couple of weeks. And I appreciate your attention to this course. I know sometimes it can seem tedious, but just trying to go over the main points here and showing that natural selection, the time frame of evolution and the fossil record, the three main aspects, do not hold up to prove evolution. They actually show a lot of holes and problems with the evolutionary theory and actually point to the biblical account in Genesis of creation and the flood. That's the end of our lesson.